This is Susie Thorpe. Cambridge 105
Radio. Right, well, it's good morning to Christine Schneider. You are registered clinical yes. psychologist, and you are from Cambridge Therapy Centre in Cowley Road. Good morning.
That's right. Hi, good morning, Susie. Well, thank you very much for inviting me onto your show today.
Well, we're talking about sleep, are we not? To me, it's a very fascinating subject because I was always very intrigued why Margaret Thatcher only had 4 hours sleep a night. How could she get only 4 hours sleep and be very buzzy the next day? And how other people
absolutely
need the sleep. How can you explain that logic?
Exactly. That's actually a really interesting point, and that is that whilst we have certain guidelines saying, well, people tend to need about 8 hours sleep a night, teenagers need a lot more than that, so that isn't a myth. They do actually need more for their brain development because of how the brain is being rerouted during the teenage years. As people get older, they tend to need fewer hours of sleep. And then there are also sometimes people out there who say, well, 8 is too much for me, 6-7 hours is okay. And then there's always the story, that Margaret Thatcher apparently was okay long-term on 4 hours of sleep. Most people tend to not fare so well on so little sleep on a regular basis. Before I came in, I was listening in. I heard you mention sleep being linked to, or lack of sleep being linked to things such as weight gain. Yes, that is true. There has been a link between an effect on the metabolic rate of people, weight gain, higher risk of type 2 diabetes. And one research, actually, that's only come out recently, unfortunately, is something quite negative. It's a little bit of bad news. We used to very much believe that you can make up for a lack of sleep. So if you get very little sleep during the week, if you have a lie-in at the weekend, we used to believe that you can make up for lack of sleep. Well, recent research has actually shown, unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be true, especially when we talk about these things such as increased risk of type 2 diabetes.
So you're saying metabolic rate, if you make up... you're thinking you're making up for sleep. You're actually, it's a waste of time. Don't even bother.
Maybe don't go as far as say don't bother, because you probably do need to get back into a better dynamic of better rest. So that's the only thing that's recently been in the research news.
So this is an ordinary problem, isn't it? Sleep problems.
Yes.
It's part of life. We either have a bad day or a good day. We might have a headache. We might have a bad day at work. We might have things happening the next day, and we're buzzing and thinking about it. It's fascinating, really, because some people can absolutely cope with it, and some can't. Who are the people that can't, and how do we help those people?
The people who can't cope so well with that, and the people I tend to see in my practice a lot, are people who have got themselves into a state, into a sort of cycle where after a few nights bad sleep, they have just got themselves into this negative spiral where now they have this underlying belief that I have insomnia, I can't sleep, I have trouble sleeping. And very often where there aren't any underlying neurological issues or underlying health issues there, very, very often this is to do with stress, with overthinking, with the way that that these people have become used to thinking, lying awake at night, and getting more and more stressed over this as well.
And obviously you've been able to help them and allay them. Let's talk about sleep, the actual part, the doing bit, the sleeping. You were saying earlier to me that it's not about concentrating on the sleep, it's the bit before.
Exactly.
Tell us about that.
So the first thing I always say to people who come to me with sleep problems is, as counterintuitive as this might sound, but you need to move away from the fact that you have to sleep, okay? First of all, take all that pressure away from yourself, and instead of saying, I have to sleep, or even saying, I have to get a good night's sleep tonight because tomorrow's a really important day, no, just get yourself into the frame of mind saying, well, I need to rest, I need to relax, don't worry about the sleep, don't watch the clock or anything like that. Do the kind of exercises that I can tell you some of them today, or that we would typically do in therapy as well. One thing maybe to quickly mention, but I don't want to go into that very much because it's such a simple and obvious thing that you can all look up, is what we refer to as good sleep hygiene. So maybe if you want to look up online, put it into a search engine and just check that there isn't anything that's maybe quite obvious but that you're not doing. I'm often surprised how many people do come to me saying they suffer from insomnia. You assume they've already tried everything, and then they might say things such as, well, you see, the issue is that the email notifications coming on my phone every few minutes, they keep me awake. And you think, well, maybe turn that off then.
In this day and age now, social media, internet, laptops, phones, so easy to carry around, they become lighter. Yeah. Is there still a theory that we shouldn't take phones and laptops into the bedrooms when we go to sleep?
Yes, there's a lot of theory around. And one thing I just quickly want to mention about theory is, for example, textbook advice would be, well, reduce the blue light intake that you get, reduce screen time, don't watch TV in the bedroom. And the reason why I'm saying theory and textbook advice is, sometimes I do get clients who say, well, you know, the one thing that will send me back off to sleep when I'm awake at night is to turn on the TV. Now, normally I wouldn't suggest that you do that. Again, it's absolutely against textbook advice. But if somebody says, hey, this is the one thing that really helps me, then my opinion is very much, well, who am I to say don't do that? But yet at the same time, there are some obvious things where we say, well, maybe try to keep your bedroom clear of these things. Most people these days do say, well, I use my phone as an alarm clock, or I actually have an app on my phone that tracks how well I sleep. And of course, you can do all these things, but again, at least make sure that it is set to silent.
Absolutely, and keeping it going. You were talking, actually, the reading part. Mm-hmm. I've always been taught that actually, if you wake up in the middle of the night, is to get a book and to read it. But I've also heard somewhere that if you do wake up and like, get up, just don't put the lights on, walk quietly around to where you need to go and then come back. Because I think the light disturbs you,
absolutely,
as you were saying earlier.
And
do you find that some of your clients have got better from just your advice? I'm sure they have. Sorry, that's a silly question. I'm sure they have. That's why they come to you.
Yes, they do usually get better. But again, what's really interesting when you mentioned even those two different things, reading or getting up, moving around, is we really very much have to find what works for an individual, okay? I can make suggestions. I can say, well, try these exercises. Some people find reading very, very helpful, and they say, well, I can't read more than half a page and then I'm off again. I personally don't like, and I know that's one theory where people are actually advised to get up, even go downstairs, do something else. The idea behind that is to move away from the bed, to change position, to not associate your bed and your bedroom with bad sleep or being unable to sleep. I personally don't like that particular one very much, but again, there are a lot of people that works for. So it's always one to find out what works best for you.
And what is the ideal length of sleep a night? What's the theory at the moment?
So again, the theory is that most adults tend to need around 8 to 9 hours of sleep.
Wow, that much?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So whilst people who say they're happy on 6 to 7 hours in the longer term, they tend to be rare. When I just said 9 hours, well, again, maybe those are sort of younger people, teenagers, they can need more than 9 hours as well. Most people, we say, well, 8 hours is a good thing. However, having just said that, okay, and this is, again, one of the things that's a bit of a myth and where people then get themselves quite wound up and worked up and think, no, I'm not sleeping well because I'm not sleeping for 8 hours a night. It's actually not as simple as that. It's not that we're saying, well, you go to bed and then you wake up 8 hours later. No. Sleep tends to happen in cycles for a start, okay? And these sleep cycles are roughly 90 minutes long. And we do various different things in those sleep cycles. So we're not always completely fast asleep. During some of that 90 minutes, we dream. That tends to happen towards the end of one of those 90-minute sleep cycles. Now, again, having said that, it's also not as simply as just adding up 4 or 5 of these sleep cycles a night. Again, they shift throughout the night. So, for example, we know that as it comes to the early hours in the morning, the sleep part in which we dream, the REM sleep, that actually tends to get longer. So again, we can't just say, well, you see, there's this 90-minute cycle and it is made up of these specific blocks. They do tend to get longer, or they do tend to vary, these individual blocks as well. And we tend to drift in and out of sleep as well. And again, that is one of the things where I often say to people, well, try not to worry too much about it. Try not to get too stressed about it, because people will often say, well, I didn't sleep at all last night. And most of the time I say, well, I'm not quite sure. Maybe you did get some sleep, but maybe it was a very restless sleep. Or again, during some of those stages in those sleep cycles, especially when we go into sleep or come out of sleep, the sort of hypnopompic states, as we refer to them, people can hallucinate as well. Or again, if in the morning, if they're just sort of coming around, they have the radio on, maybe they might pick up a story on the radio, they might incorporate that into a dream, but later believe, no, actually I was awake because I heard that story.
Interesting that you say not to worry about it, about having no sleep. And I think people worry about that more than the actual sleep themselves.
Yeah.
And I've done that too. We're all guilty of that. I'm definitely guilty of it. Who do you think, you don't have to name names, but is there a sort of a type of person that doesn't need a lot of sleep? Is there a typical person you think that person is absolutely alight most days and all days? Do you get people like that? Like Margaret Thatcher?
No, and again, I can't comment on her specifically as well, because I always found that fascinating, and I always thought I need to look more into it, where that story actually comes from and how true that actually is in the longer term through her life. But when you say, is there a typical person? No, not really. We can't say, well, this particular person needs less sleep than another. But for example, again, in some underlying conditions, or where people suffer from manic depression, for example, the sleep cycle can, or the sleep phases can be near enough reversed, where people also sometimes, well, don't go with any sleep for 48 hours and longer. But that, of course, you know, that is a clinical underlying condition.
Of course, And am I right in saying that when you do go to sleep, you sleep quite heavy for the first hour? I find when my husband goes to bed, I leave him to go to bed for an hour, and then I put the lights on. He's not even awake. Is there a theory to that, or is it just my husband?
Yes, no. So again, this is all about these sleep cycles and the individual blocks that they are made up of. Okay, and for example, the earlier blocks in these sleep cycles where we don't dream, that is actually when we are more deeply asleep, okay? So as we go into sleep, there is this weird stage where, as I said, we can sometimes have hallucinations as well. Then the first few parts of a 90-minute sleep cycle tend to be very deep sleep, dreamless sleep. As I said, towards the end, that's where we tend to dream. Again, though, having said that, these tend to change throughout our lives as well. Babies, for example, can fall straight into REM sleep, into dream sleep.
Wow.
The kind of sleep that we normally tend to have at the end of a dream cycle.
Oh, to be a baby again.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. Now, you were talking earlier about the exercises. Can you give us one piece of exercise that we could do that would
absolutely
just help us along the way today?
Okay, so just to repeat, you know, the number one rule is to not make this into something bigger in your head than it already is, to not get even more stressed about it, to reframe it a little bit, and to, rather than say, I need to sleep, to just say, okay, I'm going to rest, I'm going to relax, I'm going to do this exercise tonight, and to not say, I have to get a good night's sleep because tomorrow is important, and also I didn't sleep for the last three nights, just to go, all right, I'm going to do these exercises now. I could talk for hours and I could list 100 exercises, but they're all really based about the same principles, and that is get into a comfortable position. I often suggest start off on your back, no matter what position you sleep in later. If you've ever done traditional yoga classes where they start with a deep relaxation and end with a deep relaxation, that's the sort of position I'm talking about. So start off lying on your back and do a physical relaxation. So again, it could be as simple as imagine yourself becoming heavier, or if you want to spend some more time, do a progressive relaxation where you just start with your feet, let them become heavy and relax, move up through your whole body. And then once you have done that, try to clear your mind. I'm saying try to clear your mind because, again, of course, yes, it's easier said than done. And I think that is also what people need to understand, is all these things are exercises that you need to work on. Mm. You can't just You can't just say, all right, I'm going to do this and it's going to work. And the minute it doesn't work, you say, well, it's not working. You need to work on this. And it is effort, yes. So then you try and relax your mind. And again, there are a lot of different ways in doing that. Some could be as simple as just focusing on your breathing. If you find that too tricky, do something like a specific visualization where you imagine yourself in a safe, comfortable place. It could be moving through a building that you know, maybe from your childhood. Again, something comfortable where you feel safe, where you felt happy. Or you could imagine certain images or colours. As I said, there are loads of different things you can do.
Thank you, Christine Schneider, psychologist, clinical psychologist, and from the Cambridge Therapy Centre in Cowley Road. It's really lovely to have you here. Thank you very much on your advice. Very good advice. And I'm going to take up on that and re-listen to this myself.
Brilliant.
But thank you. And I wish you all the best for sorting out lots of people and their sleeping patterns, basically.
Brilliant.
But thank you.
Thank you very much.